It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. My co-host Veronica Rickard is off today. Coming up, should Wisconsin ban e-cigarettes and vaporizers in indoor public spaces? We'll talk to a lawmaker making a push to do just that. First, today is the birthday of Mr. Baseball himself, longtime Milwaukee Brewers announcer Bob Uecker. Here's a clip from his self-deprecating speech at his induction ceremony into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2003.
I was born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Actually, I was born in Illinois. I did not have a lot of ability as a kid. My dad wanted me to have everything that everybody else had. I think the first thing that he ever bought me was a football. And I was very young, and he didn't know a lot about it. He came from the old country. I mean, we tried to pass it and throw it and kick it, and we couldn't do it, and it was very discouraging for him and for me. And we almost quit. And finally, we had a nice enough neighbor came over and put some air in it. And what a difference.
Eerily prescient there with deflated footballs in the news these days. Today marks Uecker's 81st birthday. Here to talk about the legendary sports announcer and comedic actor is Andy Baggett. He's a sports writer for the Wisconsin State Journal. Andy, thanks a lot for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Well, Bob Uecker loves to joke about his less than stellar career as a major leaguer. He probably wouldn't have gotten into the Hall of Fame for that. But what are some of the highlights of his actual playing career?
Well, he's famous for talking about hitting 200. He's mm-hmm. famous for playing for the St. Louis Cardinals when they were catching Bob Gibson, another Hall of Famer. Those are the highlights. I think Bob would be disappointed if we rattled off any more highlights for him, just given the way he goes about living his life and the way he talks about his baseball career.
And I understand he had a brief stint as a scout for the Brewers, and that didn't go so great.
Well, that doesn't surprise. He's in his element when he's around people, when he's talking baseball. I think a lot of people in baseball start off as scouts, working their way up the ladder, and that doesn't sound like it's something that's too far out of Bob's realm, but he's definitely where he should be at this point.
Well, let's get a quick taste of what he is famous for. It is in the Baseball Hall of Fame for calling baseball games. Ryan Braun homer there. So what makes Bob Uecker stand out as for his career as a sports announcer?
Having been around him when I covered the Brewers, I think he comes across as someone who can make people laugh without any effort. And he does it in a way that is so self-deprecating and so sneaky. He doesn't smile. He doesn't let on. He doesn't make it seem like he gets the joke. But he's definitely joking, and he's definitely doing it in a humorous way, and he will drag anyone and everyone who's around him into the gag. I remember a time watching one of the first times I covered a Brewer game out in spring training. I happened to be sitting next to him. He started talking about something that just seemed so outrageous that you would put out on the airwaves as a radio announcer. I turned and I did a double take and looked at him, and he had his hand on the cough button the whole time. And it was a lesson I learned and applied many, many times afterwards that he's very sneaky, but very funny, and someone that you can never get there can never be too much of Bob Uecker in a baseball broadcast that isn't enjoyable.
That's something I've always wondered about broadcasters back way before I started doing anything of the sort, is how much of their on-air personality is shtick and how much of it is the real deal. Is there a big difference between Bob Uecker off and on the air?
It's hard to find a line there for him. It really is. He's very, again, he doesn't call attention to himself when he's not calling games. He kind of moves in and out of conversations, moves in and out of little groups of people. He doesn't, like I say, call attention to himself, which I've always found admirable about a guy who was on Johnny Carson so many times, who's made famous in the Miller Lite beer commercials, who hobnobbed in Hollywood. He always struck me as a guy whose roots were in Wisconsin, and he liked being a guy who was who mixed in with the regular Joe.
Yeah, growing up, I was telling you before we got on the air here, growing up in Michigan, Bob Uecker was still a household name because of his movies, TV show, and the Miller commercials. We would say, you know, good seats, eh, buddy, when we sat down in class in high school and that sort of thing. So what made this local sports announcer, a national figure.
Obviously, his sense of humor. I think his big break came with being on Johnny Carson. Because if you can make Johnny Carson laugh, I think that's a huge measuring stick. And again, it was his ability to be so straight. He could keep a straight face and tell jokes and tell stories, and you never got the impression that he was giggling at himself or anything like that. That he was a guy who knew how to make people laugh. He knew how to make people laugh. And when that happened, he treated it as if it was just another moment in the day. And I remember watching Johnny Carson's response to him. He laughed as much at Bob Uecker as he did at any comedian that's ever been on that show. And that's why we saw him so much on that show and why he became a household name as a result.
Yeah, even people who aren't baseball fans or from Milwaukee saw him on The Tonight Show or in the Major League movies or on Mr. Belvedere. So, I mean, I guess his natural personality just made him a good fit as a sitcom or comedic actor.
He was a natural comedian, but you wouldn't know it sitting in it, just sitting with him, because I don't think he ever took himself that seriously. He was a guy who, he was on a sitcom. He was in beer commercials. There were a lot of access points for him into our public consciousness, but I don't think he ever really got a big head about it. You talk about great lines. The Major League movie is one that my friends quote all the time. Just a bit outside, all those great, great lines that he had in that movie and that was filmed in Milwaukee partially. And he was, again, someone that when you turn on the radio to listen to him call a Brewer game, you expect to laugh at least four or five times in an inning just from the stories that he's going to tell or the delivery that he has.
Do you think he changed sports casting at all? I mean, you still see a lot of sportscasters who are pretty much just the facts. You don't always get the personality. Did he make a case that, we wanted the personality from our announcers?
I don't know that's a good question. I'm not so sure about it. I think every announcer is looking for that signature call, and Bob had one. Get up, get up, get out of here. There are very few that measure up to that one just for its distinctive element. And I think that's what I always remember about him whenever someone brings up a discussion about Bob. And again, his ability to laugh and make people laugh. I think he might have been a little bit ahead of his time with regards to bringing a personality into the play-by-play booth.
Well, you mentioned the fake broadcast where he had the mute to the cough button down. Any other stories leap to mind that say who Bob Uecker is?
I don't know that it would make you laugh, but it's just when you started covering the Brewers, there were radio people, there were TV people, newspaper people and back in the day. He treated you like you were part of a, not so much a family, but you weren't an outsider. And I always appreciated that. He made a point of finding out what your name was. He made a point of finding out who you worked for and what kind of a person you were. And if you went about your business the right way, I think you kind of got a check mark behind your name with him. And it was very appreciated. I think he's one of the treasures of this state with regards to sports. And I think there's going to come a time where he's not going to call Brewer games anymore. Whoever takes that job has a huge, huge role to fill.
Yeah, that's big. Andy, thank you so much for sharing stories about Bob Uecker with us.
Glad I could do it.
That's Andy Baggett. He's a sports writer for the Wisconsin State Journal, talking about the legendary Bob Uecker on his 81st birthday. Lawmakers are set to begin debating whether e-cigarettes and vaporizers should be added to Wisconsin's smoking ban. That expansion would prohibit people from using the cigarette alternatives in indoor public spaces, including restaurants and bars. The sponsor in the assembly says it's a common sense extension of the smoking ban that's already in place, but those who oppose it say the data on the health risks of vaporizers is not conclusive. This could interfere with businesses. Democratic State Senator Fred Risser will be leading the effort to expand this ban to e-cigarettes in the Senate. He joins us now. Senator Risser, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Well, first the basics. Why do you think Wisconsin needs an indoor vaping ban?
Well, the issue is the freedom to breathe clean air. And these e-cigarettes create a vapor that is harmful to those who smell it. It's sort of like secondhand smoke on cigarettes. The vapor on these e-cigarettes contain high levels of carcinogens, like formaldehyde, and they're just harmful for those people, not only to use them, but to people that are in the neighborhood.
When the state banned smoking in indoor public spaces, there had been a lot of research, years of research, on the adverse effects, not just of smoking, but secondhand smoke. E-cigarettes are pretty new. There isn't that body of research, no smoking gun yet, if you will. So well, are we getting ahead of ourselves here?
Well, we know this. We know that the freedom to breathe fresh air, clean air, is something that the public ought to have. And we know that these vaping cigarettes cause problems. They have nicotine in them. They have carcinogens in them. And they're just unhealthy for people in the neighborhood. Quite frankly, they say e-cigarettes will help in causing people to smoke less, perhaps in some cases, but they're also enticing the youth to participate. And they're reversing the progress we've made against the nicotine in cigarettes.
Now, as the research goes on, if it turns out, the vapor isn't so bad, it isn't concentrated enough, something like that, would you not be as in favor of this indoor ban?
Well, you know, there's many different kinds of e-cigarettes. You could find some that are perfectly healthy, I suppose, but at the same time, someone could insert the harmful vapors in cigarettes. There's no way of guaranteeing that e-cigarettes would be clear of harmful carcinogens. The research is still going on. It's true. And you might find some e-cigarettes that cause little harm. However, the freedom to breathe clean air, I think, belongs to all of us. And we know that the vaping of these cigarettes do pollute the air for those of us who like a little fresh air.
Now, one of the arguments for banning smoking, even sometimes in outdoor public spaces, can be not just the health side of things, but the idea that it stigmatizes smoking, helps reduce the number of smokers. Do you think there's a similar argument for e-cigarettes, boosting the stigma, making them less appealing?
Well, I think it depends on the individual. I suppose that that's true. As I say, the problem with the e-cigarettes is that while in some cases they might help a person give up nicotine or tobacco, they're enticing to our youth. And they have different types of flavors in these e-cigarettes, and so they're creating a new market. It's something the tobacco people are trying to do. They're trying to create a new form of cancer-producing pollution, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, the state has and has had campaigns to get people to not smoke tobacco products over the years. Would you like to see something similar, some kind of public service announcements or boosting the quit lines or something to help people avoid smoking e-cigarettes?
I think the answer is to just have it apply to every place there are now cigarettes. We have a program in Wisconsin now where we do not allow smoking of cigarettes in certain public areas. It seems to me that if we just extend it to the e-cigarettes, that that's the easy way to do it. We're not banning the smoking of them. They could still smoke e-cigarettes. It's just that we don't want them to smoke in indoor areas where the vaping can be harmful to the public. The freedom to breathe clean air is, I think, the freedom we ought to be promoting.
Now, a Republican Representative Joel Clayfish is planning to introduce a bill this week that would protect the use of e-cigarettes indoors, specifically not included in the existing ban. He had told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel he doesn't think the state should tell private business owners what patrons can and can't do in their establishments. How do you respond to that?
That's exactly the argument that was used when we were working on the tobacco cigarettes. The same argument. And society has decided that it's good business to and good for the health and good for everyone that secondhand cigarette smoke should not be available in enclosed indoor areas. This is the same thing. His argument is exactly the same as it was used and when we developed a cigarette regulation. And the majority of the legislature decided elsewhere. Majority of the public prefers the law that we have now. And I think that his argument is a worn over argument that does not promote the society.
Now, this isn't necessarily an issue that will break on partisan lines. As a Democrat, you have a minority in both chambers, but do you think that some Republicans might be on board with this? Do you think there's a chance that this could pass?
I think so. You're right. This is not a partisan matter. In fact, we have had some very strong Republican support in the past to our Indoor Air Act, and I think that the public loves the bill that we have passed now. I mean, there's been no effort to repeal it. In fact, Governor Walker, when he campaigned the first time around, said he was going to campaign to redo and outlaw it. However, when he became governor, he changed his mind and he said, "Well, it's the public likes it, and he's decided not to oppose it anymore." So, from the highest. Highest echelons, we've had a change of heart.
Now, we've seen some community bans on Alaska. Greenfield have instituted e-cigarette ordinances banning indoor use of vaping. Would you, while the state is still working on this, would you encourage other municipalities, maybe counties, to work
Absolutely.
On this?
In fact, the city of Madison just decided to ban it. The city of Madison, with over 250,000 people, has adopted an ordinance. So if this does not pass the legislature, what we will do is we'll start working on municipalities, which is the way the original ban on tobacco cigarettes happened. The legislature was slow to get going, and so municipalities went on their own, and I think that's going to happen on e-cigarettes.
Speaking of the smoking ban, stepping away from e-cigarettes for a moment, you were one of the leaders in the effort to get that statewide indoor smoking ban into place. Looking back, what have you seen as the impact of that ban since it passed?
I think its impact has been excellent. We find that a lot of businesses, the bars were especially concerned. A lot of bars around here anyway have increased their consumers because of the ban. In fact, you have the elderly population, the population that doesn't like secondhand smoke, frequently some of these businesses that since the ban went into effect. So actually, the business has improved as far as I'm concerned, and there are some people that will grumble about it, but overall, it's been a plus-plus. And the public supports it.
So one of the arguments against bans like these, in effect, is the nanny state line of thinking. We don't need the government telling us what to do where. Let competition sort it out. If you don't want to go to a place that allows, whether it's cigarettes or vaping indoors, fine. Don't go there. Find a place that does, and it'll sort itself out.
I think society has an obligation to promote certain healthy lifestyles, and no one has the right to create harmful decisions to others. Smoking cigarettes causes harm to those that don't smoke. The majority of the people don't smoke. Secondhand smoke can cause problems. It's not fair that the small percentage of the population should be able to harm the large percent of the population. Over 80% of the people do not smoke now, and to say that 20% should be able to regulate the health effects of the other 80% just isn't good society.
I want to invite our listeners to join in. We'll be taking your calls in a little bit. Should e-cigarettes and vaping be banned in indoor places, the same ones that cigarette smoking is currently banned in? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Senator Risser, before we let you go, we're a week and a day away from a new state budget address from the governor. Your thoughts, hopes, and fears on that while we've got you on the line? Senator Risser?
Yes.
What are your thoughts or fears for the upcoming state budget address next week?
Well, it'll be very interesting to see what the governor comes up with, especially with a $2 billion projected deficit.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Senator Risser. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
That was Senator Fred Risser from Madison talking about his effort to expand Wisconsin's smoking ban to include vaporizers and e-cigarettes. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard is off today. Right now, we're continuing our conversation about whether or not Wisconsin should ban e-cigarettes and vaporizers in indoor public spaces, including bars and restaurants. We just heard from Senator Fred Risser, who's making the push to expand the state's smoking ban to include those devices. And we'd like to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Do you think e-cigarettes should be allowed indoors? Do you use them? Have you seen people using them? What's your reaction? What's the etiquette surrounding this? There's not conclusive information yet. This is a young technology about the health risks. Do you think it's too soon to start banning or a good precaution? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to Joe to start us off in Eau Claire. Joe, hi.
Hi there. I'm kind of tired of all the misinformation that's going on about e-cigarettes. Basically, your main components of an e-cigarette are your juice. The juice is made up of propyl glycol and vegetable glycol, which we have been eating and digesting for over 45 years. The other components are flavoring, and the bad part for you is nicotine. If the research were there that said it was bad, they would know by now. I've been vaping for 5 years. I've successfully quit smoking. There is no reason for people to come at vaporizing like this.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Kim is with us now in Milwaukee. Kim, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a vapor too. Yeah, and I don't like what they're trying to do. Vaping is not smoking. The other gentleman who called is correct. I make my own juice. I use VG, and I mix it with stuff that I use in baking, you know. It's food extract is what it is. So if you, you know, don't like the smell of cinnamon muffins or strawberry cake, you know, then you're not going to like vaping. And I don't know too many people who do. Now, the nicotine aspect of it, there's a plus side on that because vaping helped me quit smoking. And, you know, I probably was smoking probably 18 to 24 milligrams with cigarettes. I'm down now to 6 in less than a year. 6 milligrams. I'm, you know, my goal is by summer to get down to 3 and then down to 0. So it's the only thing that's worked for me. Now, the other thing that I have a problem with is, you know, people seem to be okay with banning the vaping, but they don't say anything about perfume. And that stuff has got unbelievable amounts of chemicals in it that are bad for you.
Hey, Kim, I want to ask before we let you go, etiquette-wise, do you vape in public places? Do you get funny looks from people as you pull it out and try it out?
No. When I'm walking down the street, you know, because it's not like cigarettes. You know, the vape disappears so quickly, and I'm not a cloud chaser, so it's not like big, giant, you know, vapes. So when I'm walking down the street, nobody looks at me. You know, I try to go up to smokers and I say, you know, they say, what's that? And I go, oh, it's vaping. And they say, oh, what is that? And I say, well, you want to quit smoking. And they're very interested. So in that case, yeah, in my own home, in my car, I think I should, if I go to a vaporium or whatever, a vape shop, I should be able to try, you know, juices there. I don't see the problem. Now, I can understand a little bit with the nicotine, but you know what? People have the patches that emanates out of your body, you know, because we're always putting that out. And the gum as well. People
Kim,
put that out in the can.
Gotcha, Kim. Thanks a lot for the call. We are talking about an effort to extend Wisconsin's current indoor smoking ban, you know, think at bars, restaurants, to include vaping, e-cigarettes. We heard from a sponsor of legislation to do that just a little while ago. Taking your calls now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to Linda now in Madison. Linda, hi.
Hi. With that last caller, there are a lot of places that post, please be conservative or perfume cologne-free zones for asthmatics and people with chemical sensitivities. So vaping, I think, falls in that category. There are people that you don't know what their triggers are, and you're going to cause them to have severe problems breathing.
Linda, thanks a lot for that call. An anti-vaping in public places call there. How about you? Ban e-cigarettes, ban vaping at public indoor spaces, bars and restaurants, as cigarettes currently are. If you tried, got a busy signal, a couple lines have opened up for you now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you vape? Do you sell the product? What do you think when you see somebody using one of these e-cigarettes? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We've got Matt on the line with us now in Racine. Matt, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think about this?
You know what? It's a little upsetting because, you know, people have independence, and this product was brought to the public to help reduce smoking. Smoking's bad. Real tobacco cigarettes is terrible. And this product is brought onto the market to help those, because you have the patches, you have the gum, you have the medicine, and they're all terrible for the body. And this product is inconclusive of how bad it is, and maybe we should stop trying to expand bills and waste taxpayer money and start putting more research into what's actually in this. What's so bad about this? We still haven't stiffened laws on alcohol, but we have to be about tobacco. We have to be about everything and free air, and that's how they're going to win the public opinion, because it's the small minority versus the majority. They're going to win it because it's public opinion. Free air, clean air, they're going to win it. I personally vape and smoke cigarettes. I'm having a hard time quitting the real tobacco versus the vapor. And the etiquette that I've seen around it being in public smoking it, I haven't gotten, you know, strange looks. I haven't gotten people, you know, shame on you. There's no taboo about it. It almost seems more acceptable than if I was standing on a street outside of a bar having a real cigarette. I get less ugly looks inside of an establishment with a vaporizer than I do about the ugly looks I get while smoking the real thing.
Matt, thanks a lot, and good luck, by the way, with your efforts to quit the real thing by vaping or other means. Thanks a lot for that call. Dennis in Green Bay is next. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. The only thing I would say is that, you know, the people who use it to quit smoking may actually quit smoking, but they're still taking in nicotine, and it's an addictive drug, and I don't think if cigarettes are banned in public places, everything else should be.
All right, Dennis, thanks for that call. Next we'll go to Mary in Menominee. Mary, hi.
Hi. I believe that they should be banned. As a former cigarette smoker, just sitting next to somebody that is vaping makes me want to smoke again.
So what is it? Is it the smell you get a little nicotine, or is it just seeing somebody going through the action?
It must be the nicotine, because every single time I've been near somebody. So I don't think it's a good thing, and it's not a good thing for children.
Interesting. Mary, thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. A couple minutes still for your calls. Should the state expand our current indoor smoking ban that applies to, you know, cigarettes, cigars, places like bars, taverns, restaurants? Should that include vaping, e-cigarettes? We'll go now to Marcus in Green Bay. Marcus, hi.
Hello. I think vaping is, number one, it's an action that people have to witness. If you're in a captive audience, a restaurant, or wherever you are with that person. And then I want to take it to a different level, if you could compare it to chemicals, and I'm talking perfumes and sprays, which I have like a zero tolerance because of my profession. So, I mean, where you are, you know, pushing something on another person who has a hard time with it. So actions, and then, you know, the chemical reality, if you would, please.
Gotcha, Marcus. Thanks a lot for the call. Rich joins us now from Hudson. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, hi. I think there's an important distinction between eating vegetable oil and inhaling the vapor from vegetable oil. And until the studies are in, I think we should err on the side of, you know, wisdom and prevent this from being shared in a public space.
All right, Rich, we'll go now to Joe in Port Washington. Joe, hi.
How you doing?
Good. What do you think about this? Ban vaping in public places?
I am going to have to disagree with it. I've been vaping for 2 years now myself, and vaping has definitely helped me quit smoking. I think a big point here is just on the side of being considerate of other people. No different than if you're in public and somebody's smoking a cigar or a pipe that's offending you. There's certain places that you should just be more considerate with your vapor, where you're blowing it, and confined rooms, things of that nature. I think if, you know, if people could just keep that in mind, I think it would be a much more acceptable thing rather than people just blowing vapor all over the place. I think that would definitely help the situation. But I understand that's hard to regulate something like that, and I'll listen to your comment off the air. Thank you.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. This is going to be a discussion, whether we're talking about legislation or the health impacts or benefits to quitting smoking, of vaping in general. I think I've said vaping more in the last 15 minutes than I have ever. You can keep sharing your thoughts and continue the conversation over at the Central Time Facebook page on the idea of extending Wisconsin's indoor smoking ban to e-cigarettes, to vaporizers. Time for Wisconsin Life. Many people believe that anyone with a mouth can be a stand-up comedian, but standing on a stage in front of a crowd to prove how funny you are is a lot harder than it looks. High school senior Joe Schaefer tells us about his first time behind the mic.
I was raised listening to great comedians, people with the ability to turn embarrassing moments into hilarious stories. Having no shortage of embarrassments myself, I figured I could be a stand-up comic. Luckily, my hometown of Madison has a strong comedy scene. Almost every night of the week, local bars host open mics, where even a teenage rookie like me can get actual stage time. I spent weeks writing jokes in preparation for my public debut. Every night I practiced in front of my parents, giving myself a glorious introduction at the start of my act. But even with only two people in the audience, I got the shakes when I heard myself say my own name. And here's Joe Schaefer! Admittedly, being terrified to do your act in your own living room is not a good sign. But I finally worked up the courage to go to an open mic at a small downtown bar. To my dismay, my parents insisted on coming with me. The place is probably full of wackos, they argued. There were only three people in the bar, all comedians. They sat far apart, each studying a notebook. In the front was a tough-looking guy in a motorcycle jacket and, strangely, a silky red wig. On the right, a man whispered his routine to himself. I caught a few alarming words about an evil twin. On the left, a young woman in a sweatshirt had her hood pulled down so tightly that only her nose was visible. Were these the wackos my parents had worried about? From the back, I craned my neck to see the other comics' notebooks. Each page was crammed with dozens of jokes. I looked at my own index card. I had four. The MC was late, giving me more time to stare at the back of the red wig and wish I'd never been born. He finally bounded in, checked the sign-up sheet, and turned to the microphone. "Please welcome the very funny Joe Schaefer?" "Schaefer," I muttered, walking up to the mic. So much for a glorious introduction. I scanned the crowd, almost half of which was my parents. My index card was smudged with sweat, barely legible. I took a deep breath and began my routine. It didn't sound funny anymore as it came out of my mouth. My jokes about being a lame high schooler seemed less like comic exaggeration and more tragically autobiographical. And yet, the other comics were kind to me. They smiled at my punchlines, and the man in the wig even laughed at a couple of them. I left the stage feeling much better than I deserved to. Their generosity encouraged me to try the open mic night again. This seemed to be a group that even a stammering high school kid might one day feel comfortable in. I figured they knew exactly what kind of person would want to do stand-up comedy. A wacko.
Joe Schaefer is a high school senior in Madison. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television. For more info, check out wisconsinlife.org. Joining us now to talk more about the comedy scene in Wisconsin is Jason Stevens. He's a voice actor and co-founder of Monkey Business Institute in Madison. Jason, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, now, we just heard about someone's first experience with stand-up. What drew you to the improv side of the comedy scene?
Honestly, I went to a show one night when Madison was home to a comedy sports franchise, and I saw the folks on stage doing what I had been doing since I was a little boy. I didn't know that that was something that you could just do. So I was drawn to the unscripted nature of it, the idea that anything could happen as long as you were on stage with people who believed whatever you believed. And there were no mistakes. There were mistakes, but there weren't errors. You know, you could get away with just about anything doing improv.
Now, we've seen improv rise and fall over the years on TV.
Sure.
So can you just explain, basically, for maybe someone who's never seen improv, what is it? How does it work?
So there are different types of improvisational comedy, and there's different types of improvisation outside of comedy. For the general public's perception of improv, you'd look at Whose Line Is It Anyway, probably the most popular short-form arrangement of improv, and the audience plays a part. They give suggestions. They give ideas. That's more to ensure that the improvisers are making it up on the spot. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it also adds an element that entertains the improvisers. And then those improvisers either perform short scenes, create short character pieces, or play games inspired by those suggestions.
Now, you've done a little stand-up. You've done a lot of improv.
Yes.
I think of myself as kind of a funny person who would be terrible at both. But it seems like stand-up would be nerve-wracking. It's just you. It's all you. Is there something about safety in numbers with improv?
Each of them have their fear factor built in. With improv, the safety is that the moment you've said what you're going to say or do what you've done, it's gone. It's in the air, and now you move on to something else. So if you hit a sour note doing improv, if you do something that the audience doesn't appreciate or doesn't get, you move on to the next thing. With stand-up, you're honing your material over night after night after night of doing it. So there's terror in that for me, having to rely on my own wit and then script it and then wait for the laugh. It's all in the timing, and there's a perception to it. I'd much rather fly by the seat of my pants.
Okay, so how would it work? Say you and I were an improv troupe.
Sure.
What would a thing... So, and we'd ask, what, for a suggestion from Michelle over there?
Yes, we'd say, Michelle, can you please give us a relationship that you might... two people might have together.
So say it out loud.
Divorce.
Divorce.
Okay. So... the way I do to handle a suggestion is often to let that suggestion influence or inspire me. Uh-huh. So when I think of divorce, we don't necessarily have to do a scene that's a divorcing couple or at a therapist's office. We can let divorce inspire us. When I think of divorce, I think about two people doing the best they can to get along. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's our scene. So we'd go into it wherever we happen to be. That's a really nice hat you're wearing.
Mm-hmm. And I'd have to say something like, oh, thank you. I got it at the store down the street.
Oh, you shop down there.
Well, what's wrong with down there?
Oh, nothing. Nothing.
Well, wait.
Wrong with...
You judged that.
Did I?
Hmm? You had that look. You know the look.
What look?
You know, like when I say I like mixed martial arts. That look.
It's a horrible hat. Take it back. Everything I said.
Okay, so that's improv, and we've demonstrated my shortcomings on improv. But as I understand it, the key is yes and. You take the thing the other person said.
Yes.
You never shoot it down.
Correct. You let that influence you. You let that flavor you. And, you know, a lot of people will say different things about improv, how it's a character piece. You know, improv is all about characters. Mm-hmm. It's all about story. And that's really true, because even in a short-form improv setting, you'll have some games that really don't rely much on character. Mm-hmm. And that's really accessible, and it's really fun to watch. But I think you also need those fun stories in improv.
What is it? What's the main skill that it takes to be good at improv and to be a real contributor to make that spontaneous scene really funny?
Being present.
Okay.
Without question, being present and being able to listen and enjoy what's going on in front of you, seeing your scene partners and hearing them. And luckily, that translates really well into a lot of different things.
So the key, it sounds like, oh, you can't be like, this was funny when I did it yesterday, so I'm going to do that again today.
Exactly. And you can't.
It's the opposite of stand-up.
Yeah, and you can't go into it with an idea that, you know, I have this thought in my head, you are a butcher and I'm a farmer and I'm going to sell you this pig. Because when I walk on stage, you're going to maybe tell me who I am or infer who you are. So you can't go into it with an idea. You have to let that happen.
Well, I'm going to shift gears to another a bit of your comedic life.
Sure.
Away from improv, you do and get work doing impersonations.
Yes, I do. I do a variety of celebrity impersonations. For instance, I'm well known for my Morgan Freeman impersonation. I don't know when it was that I found I could impersonate Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, how do you stumble onto that?
I think it just happened. One day I was talking and thought, oh, that sounds like Morgan Freeman. So I do a lot of natural voice work, but part of the flexibility that I've got is to do the impersonations.
And you've done Morgan, you're big in Australia as Morgan Freeman, I understand.
Australia and New Zealand. I even get work in other countries as the president, Barack Obama. And, you know, that's unusual to me because when you think about other countries, I'm a rock star there. You know, how does that work?
And it's, you do a Christopher Walken to a more commonly done impersonation.
Yeah, yeah. Look, everybody does a Christopher Walken impression. It's commonplace mostly, but it comes in handy.
It comes in handy. All right. Well, so if somebody, just getting back to improv for a moment, if somebody wanted to give it a try yes. around the state, I know you're here in Madison, there's mm-hmm. other improv groups around the state.
Yeah.
How do they do it? How do you make your first step?
Well, first of all, go to see an improv show, because especially in Madison where you've got multiple improv groups that are all vying to entertain you, it's helpful to see what everyone offers, and it's helpful to meet the people who improvise and get to know them. And then from there, take a class. And then, you know, take another class if you like it.
All right. And so you can do that in a safe space. You don't have to start right off in front of a crowd.
Absolutely. Classes, improv classes, are safe places where you are encouraged to take chances and fail.
Well, Jason, thanks a lot. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
That's Jason Stevens. He's a voice actor and co-founder of Monkey Business Institute. That's an improv group in Madison.